Well, good morning, everybody. We are in the final Sunday of our three-week series that we called Two Words. Each week, we have looked at verses in the Bible that are only two words long. We started with Jesus wept. Last week, we did pray continually. Amy mentioned that we have been doing what we called a prayer experiment over this past week. And now, for a moment of accountability and encouragement, how many of you participated in at least one of the days of the prayer experiment? Raise a hand. All right. Now, audience participation moment. Of all of the days, because each day, if you weren't here last week, in an effort to be people that pray more continually, we decided we were going to practice or participate by doing a variety of different ways of praying through the week. And so, out of curiosity, if you had to pick just one day, that day's prayer was important for me, what day would it have been?
Saturday.
Who said that? Why Saturday?
San Anselm's prayer, because we're studying in pursuit of God, and it went right in.
Oh, it fit right in with the other study that you were doing.
Right.
It's amazing how God does that. Somebody else, what was the day that was most important for you? See, I saw you raise your hands too. I'm learning that this congregation does a lot of things, but sharing in the midst of a service isn't one of them yet. Were any other days significant for you? Thursday. Why was Thursday important for you, Mark? The Lord's Prayer one?
Yeah.
Doing it differently, breakfast, lunch, dinner? I had somebody share with me, they go, I have enjoyed praying throughout the week, and I was sad that the week was coming to an end until I realized I can repeat it next week. Go figure. It's as if we could continue to pray. So last week was pray continually. This week, however, the two words that we're using are I am. Now, the two words I am are not a single verse. In fact, it shows up multiple times in the scriptures. But those two little words, I am, are some very, very important words. Now, if you were to choose the most important story or moment in the Old Testament and the most important or pivotal moment in the New Testament, well, choosing the one in the New Testament would be easy. The life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Without that, we don't have a New Testament. Without that, we're not gathered here this morning. That's an easy one to choose. If you had to choose one story only from the Old Testament, what's the pivotal moment? It would most likely be the Exodus. Now, you could make a strong argument for the covenant that's established between Abraham and God. I'll give you that. You can make a strong argument in that direction. But the Exodus is probably the pivotal moment in the Old Testament. Interestingly enough, in those two stories, the Exodus, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, are the two places that you find our two words, I am. Now, when we go to the Exodus, the place that we hear about I am is in the third chapter of Exodus. It's that moment at the burning bush. God has called Moses to go back to Egypt because I'm sending you back to Egypt so that you can be a part of my rescuing and restoring my people who are in slavery. And so he's going to send them back to Egypt to be part of that. And Moses' response, I love Moses' response, is to come up with excuse after excuse after excuse on how this isn't going to work, how God's making a mistake, there's a better way to do it, it doesn't include me. And when one of his final excuses or one of his final ways of trying to wiggle out of this going back and being part of God's restoration project is Moses asked God, hey, if I go back, I love the if I go back, and they ask me, who is sending you? What name shall I give them? And it's at that moment that God responds by saying, tell them, I am. Tell them, I am that I am is sending you. If that response by God doesn't confuse you, if that response doesn't make you act like a dog that's heard a high-pitched noise and go, then you've been in church too long and you've gotten too used to it. Did you hear how God responded? What's your name, God? God responds by going, I am that I am. I was reading this past week, and I thought, in that moment, God is a combination of Shakespeare and Dr. Seuss. I mean, think about it for a moment. You know, Moses, fair question. What's your name, God? God responds by going, to be or not to be. I am, I was, I is. I am here, I am there, I am everywhere. I do not like grain, eggs, and ham. It's a bizarre response. I mean, any one of us, put it this way. You have a friend goes into the hospital to give birth to their baby, and they come home, and what do you ask them? What's the child's name? And if they looked at you and said, I am, you'd have just kind of gone, what? What kind of name is that? Part of the reason why this name, I am that I am, is a confusing name to us is we're not Hebrew. Oh, we're not. Now, the Hebrew people would have had a better understanding of what that name was all about. And that's good because the name was being delivered to a Hebrew group of people. Now, the problem is we're not Hebrew, and there's some certain things about Hebrew culture, Hebrew language, that'll help us appreciate this name, I am that I am. So we'll try to get that moving. Oh, I got nothing moving. Can you go ahead and go to the next slide? Oh, all right. So we're going to do this without slides, so you guys can be able to follow along, because it should be on the front of your bulletin. But a couple things you need to know about Hebrew culture, Hebrew language. First is this. Hebrew names are words with meanings. Hebrew names are words with meanings. Think of it this way. We choose names because maybe they have some meaning or maybe they just sound good with your last name. Hebrew names are words. It's almost more like what we think of when we think of traditional Native American names. Dances with wolves, you know, runs with fist, Sitting Bull. I mean, these names are words with meanings. Hebrew names tended to be words with meanings. Still not getting any kind of forward, but it's going to be all on you. If you know the story of Isaac, there were his parents, Sarah and Abraham, in the retirement community. And they find out that they're going to have a child for the very first time. Sarah's response? She laughs. What's Isaac mean? One who brings laughter. That's why he's named that. Moses means drawn out. What do we know about Moses? He was drawn out of the Nile. Elijah means Yahweh is my God, which is an appropriate thing because Elijah was constantly going up against the prophets of Baal saying, no, Yahweh is my God, not Baal. Hebrew names are words with meanings, and it's certainly the case with I am, but we'll get back to that in a moment. Hebrew thought is built upon that which can be experienced or known. The way that Hebrew thinking was, it was built around that which was a little more tangible, that which can be seen, felt, heard, tasted, smelled. Hebrew thinking was built around what can be experienced. Not which is just something that is theoretical, but something that can be known, something that can be experienced. That's going to be important here because God will reveal himself as one that can be known. And finally, Hebrew verbs built on action. And you might be thinking, well, Mike, verbs are action words. Thank you very much. But there's a difference between English verbs and Hebrew verbs. English verbs are built on time. You have past, present, and future. Hebrew verbs are built upon that which is completed or yet to be completed or unfinished. It's called the imperfect. So when God answers Moses. Moses goes, hey, what's your name? God's response was, Eyah Asher Eyah. It's the Hebrew, I am that I am. And when he responds that way, he's giving him a verb. God reveals his name using a verb, and the verb is the imperfect. God's not imperfect, the word is. In other words, God is saying, I will continue to be at work, but the work is not yet done. It also reveals something about who God is, and God is essentially telling the people, I can be known by you. I'm not some theoretical, removed God. I am present with you and can be known, and I remain at work at you. When you think about I am, this is how I want you to think about it. It's as if God is saying, I exist in such a fashion that I can be known by you, and my work in and among you is not yet completed. When God revealed himself as I am, this is what he's saying. Because remember, in Hebrew thought, names mean something. There's a lot of meaning here. It's built around that which can be known. And God is saying, I can be known by you. I can be experienced by you. You will see me at work. You will feel my presence. You will hear my voice. I will be known by you. And I remain at work in and through you. When you think I am, this is essentially what God is saying. Now, there are obviously some theological relevance with this name. The I am reveals an otherness, a being that exists in himself, not dependent on or derived from any other. In all times and in all places, he is. No other being can make such a claim. Aristotle himself said this about I am. Only one being could conceivably say, I am. God's the only one. So there's some theological realities. Now, when we think about I am, lots of times we think about the fact that the I am reveals that God is present and remains present. And that is true, but there's more to it. When God says, I am, he's revealing that he is faithful. He can be counted on. I can be known by you, and I'm going to remain with you because I'm not done with you yet. We're not finished. What you're experiencing right now is not the end of the story. I'm with you. I will remain with you. And we have work to do. I can be trusted. I am faithful, which is important because God makes a number of promises to the Hebrew people. If you go three chapters forward to the sixth chapter of Exodus, this is what God says. Therefore, say to the Israelites, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. When God says, I am, he is saying, I'm present. He is saying, I am faithful. I've made promises to you, and I can be counted on to see my promises through. I exist in such a way that I can be known by you. And my work in and among you is not yet completed. This is what God is saying when he says, Eyah Asher Eyah, I am that I am. Now take that idea of what I am is. Take that idea and move it forward into the New Testament. When you get to the Gospel of John, you got Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all telling the story of Jesus. When you get to the Gospel of John specifically, Jesus makes a series of I am statements. Essentially, when people are asking who he is, Jesus' response is over and over and over again, the same response that Moses heard at the burning bush. He says, I am. But now as you hear these I ams, remember what we learned about Hebrew. God can be known. The tangible, names with meaning. Listen to these responses of Jesus when asked who he is. He says, I am the living bread, which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. I love the fact it says, I am the living bread, that which can be tasted, remember? Tangible. I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of the world. Again, playing with the tangible. I am God and I can be seen. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and he will go in and out and find pasture. Again, Jesus is playing with the tangible again. Not only can he be tasted, not only can he be seen, he can be felt. But remember our big description of what I am means. I can be known by you. I can be tasted. I can be seen. I can be felt. I can be known by you, and my work in and among you is not yet done. You can live forever. You can have the light of life. You can go out and find what is good. Jesus has a number of other I am statements. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I am not done with you. I remain present with you to see you through all of this. Now, occasionally people have said to me, it's happened a couple times at least, a person has come to me and they have said, you know, Mike, Jesus never says in the Bible, I am God. To which I have a couple responses for them. One, you're right. Jesus never says those three words in a row, I am God. Fair enough. But if you ever take the time to actually read the Gospels, Jesus says he's God over and over and over again. In the Gospel of John, he says, anyone that has seen me sees the Father. Before Abraham was, I am. But maybe my favorite I am statement of Jesus takes place in the Garden of Gethsemane. If you ever wonder if Jesus reveals himself as God, the Garden of Gethsemane is a great place to go. Now, just to set the scene for you, it's the night he's arrested. He's going to be arrested, tried, tortured, publicly executed, buried, eventually raised from the dead. Garden of Gethsemane. He's there praying, and up come the guards. Hebrew guards, up come the guards. And watch this exchange between Jesus and these individuals. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, arrest, torture, crucifixion, went out and asked them, these guards and such, who is it you want? Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. I am he, Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Jesus said, I love this, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. Did you catch that? These guys ask about Jesus. His response is, I am. Their response is to go and fall to the ground. They have come in the presence of the Holy One of Israel, and for a split second, they realize it, and they are undone, and they collapse. We're so comfortable with God that this is outside of our way of thinking. These guys came face to face with a living God, God in the flesh, Emmanuel, and their response was to collapse to the ground. I am. Anybody that says, you know, God, Jesus never says that he's God. Really? Tell that to those guys. Because they realized what was taking place. At the burning bush, and in the person and work of Jesus Christ, we get the picture of who God is, and he describes himself in those moments as, I am. I exist in such a way that I can be known by you, experienced by you. And I'm not done with you yet. I'm going to continue to work in and through you to make your life what your life is supposed to look like. I'm not done with you yet. Unfortunately, we sometimes, in the midst of our own personal struggles, in the midst of our questioning, in the midst of our pain, in the midst of loss, in the midst of difficulties, in the midst of struggles, we lose sight of God as I am, and we reduce God to he was. We passively acknowledge maybe what God has done, and we forget who God is. Because God is not he was. God is I am. This past week, I got a phone call from some dear friends of my wife and I. They're a younger couple, probably about 28 years old, and they're pregnant with their first child. And I got a call, I think Monday. She was 24 weeks along. She went to the doctor's for an appointment, and the doctor looked down and goes, "You're in labor, 24 weeks along." They rushed her to the hospital, and they've got her all hooked up with this, that, and the other thing, trying to keep that little girl in the oven a little bit longer. Got a call, or got a text this morning at 12:15 from Scott, her husband, saying that contractions have started again. And so this, all through the morning, I was kind of up and sleeping, texting back and forth. And this morning I called them, and Scott put me on speakerphone and put me, you know, with the two of them in the hospital room. As they're going through physical, emotional pain right now, there's a lot of uncertainty of what's going to take place over the next handful of hours. And I said, "Scott, Kristen, this morning at church, we're going to be talking about the fact that God is I am. That God is a God that is not distant. He is a God that is intimately present. And he can be known. He can be experienced. He can be felt. And God is a God that is not finished with us." And I said, "Your story and your story with Emma," they've already named her, "and your story with Emma is not yet complete. God is not done with this story yet. He is still at work." And then we prayed together, and I pulled into the church parking lot and kept on praying after that. I don't know what's happening in your story right now. I don't know what struggles exist in your story. I don't know what questions and concerns exist in your story right now. But what you need to know is, in the midst of what you are going through this morning, God is I am. Take a look.
"I need hope." And he answers, "I am." Who could possibly be smart enough to figure all this out? I am. What works? I am. What lasts? I am. What's the latest thing? I am. What's the hippest thing? I am. I need a fresh start. I am. I need a bigger story. I am. My vision is bigger than my resources. I am. Nothing is real anymore. I am. Who can I trust? I am. I'm not sure who's on my team. I am. Nobody's listening to me. I am. I don't have a prayer. I am. My marriage is sinking, and I don't know where to turn. I am. I've always hoped for a marriage in the future, but I don't know what's going to come. I am. I can't hold on. I am. I'm pouring into others. Who's pouring into me? I am. If we fail, who'll get the job done? I am. Not sure why I'm here. I am. I've given all I can give and it's not enough. I am. I'm tired. Amen? I am. I quit. I am. I can't. I am. I need a drink. I am. I need a fix. I am. I need a lover. I am. I just need somebody to hold me. I am. I am the first and the last and the beginning and the end.
At the beginning of the service, we sang a song called I Am. And the chorus of the song, I love what David Crowder, who wrote the song, I love how he plays with the words. If you remember the chorus of the song we sang at the beginning of the service, it said, I am holding on to you. I am holding on to you. In the middle of the storm, I am holding on to you. Which begs a question. Which way? Is the song saying, I am holding on to you. I am holding on to you. In the middle of everything going on in my life, I am holding on to you. Is that what it's saying?
No.
Or is it saying, I am is holding on to you. I am is holding on to you. In the middle of everything you're going through, I am is holding on to you. Which is it? To which I say, yes. It's both. Because there comes a moment in everyone's life where in the midst of our difficulties, in the midst of our struggles, in the midst of pain, we have a choice. Am I going to choose to hold on tight to my grievances? I'm going to hold on tight to my grudges. I'm going to hold on tight to what I can control. Or am I going to say, that doesn't work. And I'm going to surrender control and hold on to I am. I am holding on to you. I choose to hold on to you. In the midst of everything I'm going through, right here, right now, I choose to have the courage to hold on to you. And the beautiful thing as we make that choice is God smiles and says, that's good because I am holding on to you. Always have been, always will be. I am holding on to you in the midst of everything you've gone through. In the midst of everything you're going through, in the midst of what you're going to be going through, I am a God that can be known by you and is never going to be done with you. My love for you will not allow me not to hold on to you any longer. I am holding on to you. I am holding on to you. In the middle of the storm, I am holding on to you. Will you close your eyes for a moment? I don't know where you stand in your relationship with God. Perhaps you've got a faith that is so very, very, very strong. And this morning you are just saying, amen and amen. I choose to continue to hold on to the one that's holding on to me. Maybe you're here this morning and you have had moments when your faith could be described as strong, and lately the struggles and questions seem bigger than the God you once worshiped. Maybe this morning is the morning you say, I choose to humble myself before the I am and say, I am holding on to you. Or maybe you've never made such a choice. Today's the day. Today's the day to say, I choose I am. I'm not choosing anymore what I can accomplish. I'm choosing I am, the one who loves and never gives up on me, the one who forgives and sets me free. Take a moment in prayer. Before the God that is I am, and how do you respond this morning? Is your response, I'll continue to do it my way? Or maybe this morning is the day that you, maybe for the first time or for the thousandth time, say, I choose, I am.